Yeah, I wonder if he's packed the boardies for Cottesloe Beach or gone down the Margaret River and just having a little...
Well, I saw him with the beach in the background last night doing a little stand-up. So he's obviously over there with the team, as we know. Denny gets all the inside breaking news on Channel 9. Best in the business. We'll check in with him, eh?
Morning, Denny.
Morning, boys. I can tell you about the time zones. I've been up since about 2 a.m. I'm an early riser normally. I've been walking the streets of Scarborough looking for a coffee joint that's open. I found one.
How'd that go?
I'm good now. It's just I'm at the Livers Skate Cafe. I'm having a coffee. I'm happy. I feel like my day's half over, and it's 6 a.m. here.
Welcome to our world, Dan. Yeah.
Oh, mate, how do you do it? No wonder you blokes are nuts.
Yeah, yes.
Yes.
Absolutely bonkers.
Speak for yourselves, you blokes, agree?
The funny thing, look, the interesting thing is, right, that Queensland are only coming over here on Thursday. And I don't know whether that's going to be an advantage for New South Wales, because they'll have got used to the... I know it's not a huge time difference, but it is a time difference. And Papua to play cricket over here. And yeah. I don't know if that affects teams or not. But New South Wales decided to come over early. And they're, I guess, acclimatising, for want of a better word, to the hours and getting used to that sort of thing. It does impact you, there's no doubt.
It did for us, but again, we're playing a five-day game. So if we're playing a test match, we'd like to give ourselves at least a week. And again, we're getting up earlier because the game's starting at 10 or 10.30. But, yeah, interesting to see if it has that impact on, you know, one game, one Origin game. And I think the other thing as well, you're a bit tired. I would imagine, Lodge, you know better than anyone, playing an Origin game, I don't care if you've had no sleep or the world's best sleep, the adrenaline... You just flick a switch and you get on with it for that day.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where you might wake up early, but the game's on early too.
Yeah.
So you're not having to...
6 o'clock here, isn't it?
Yeah, so you're not having to wait around for that 8 o'clock kickoff.
I'm just looking for an edge for the Blues.
Yeah.
Well, Denny, I think the edge is coming. I know there's a lot of criticism around the amount of changes to the squad, but I actually think this is a better team than game one.
Yeah, look, the private conversations you have with them, with the Blues right now, is that, yeah, they think they've, you know, they don't say we got it wrong in game one. Mm. They think they've got it better in game two, particularly around the balance of the bench. That's what they keep talking about, and the balance of the team. And they feel like they, you know, they've got it right this time around. And there are a lot of things to like about what they've done. Where it's interesting, I think Benny might have talked about it, but you know, are we copying Queensland? I know that I speak to Gus, and Gus says that you don't want to be doing what Queensland have done, because you're a step behind them. Yeah. And that's in terms of the hooking role and sharing the hooking role. But it can't be a bad thing having an outstanding player like Appy Coruscant, doing his stuff for the Blues first up, followed by an equally outstanding player in Damien Cook. They're a couple of real strikes. And we talked about New South Wales lost in the middle in the ruck, and I think that's a clear, that's a reaction to it, as is, you know, a desire by New South Wales not to be pushovers when they're defending, and not to be, I guess, the good guys and the clean skins when it comes to tackling.
Danny, let's assume that we have got selection right in this game. Is a week's preparation enough time for these individuals to come together as a group?
Really interesting, Pup. They've got a training session today, one again on Wednesday. They have Thursday off to have a big session again Friday, and a captain's run. That, to me, that feels like a lot in the lead-up to a game. Okay. Laurie would be probably far better placed than I would be, but it's a short turnaround. That feels like they're cramming a lot into a short amount of time, and I hope they don't run out flat. Laurie, would that be a...
It would be, but what they'd be looking at is obviously low intensity and not staying out there too long. So they might, instead of having an hour and a half session, it might be a 40-minute session, and it might be at 50% rather than 80%.
It's interesting, was like some of the sessions that initially were sent out on the media advisory were 2.5 hours.
Really?
Yeah, like 10 till, like we were told, yep, you can get there at 10 and get the warm-up, and that finishes at 12:30. Hmm. I think today that might be a bit different now, but initially they were the times we were given. And that's long, long.
Yeah, that might include weights.
Well, no, that's when we're at the ground. That's when we're at the we're only
2.5 hours. Oh wow!
That was the initial. That was in the initial media.
They're playing a 2020 first.
Yeah, that doesn't. Well, I don't think it includes their weights because that's when we're told to go to their field sessions.
Yeah.
Whether there's also weights included, but they usually have a break and then do weights as well. So I don't know. Like I'll be interested to see how much. They're actually doing. I find that fascinating that, you know, that it is a new team and it is a short turnaround. But I've spent a bit of time with Freddie at airport and over here and waiting around to do a couple of media things, and he's as relaxed out.
That was my question, Denny. You know him as well as most and you've seen him and worked with him. How's he feeling? Is he still the same? Or can you notice a bit of a change in him?
I noticed a change in you and Laurie towards the end.
Yes, there was. I was angry.
Wasn't he angry? Was back in the dark days.
Dark.
Oh, God. Let's go. Excuse me, Mr. Daly. Can I get a chat? Before you see Loz in there.
Then it'd be no. Sir. Yes.
No. Sir Daly.
It was none of this. G'day, Denny. Or no. In a minute, mate. No.
Back off Widler. Go away. look, I think at the moment he's chilled as, you know, typical Freddie. Yeah, he's getting around, smiling. I was interested. We're doing the earthing and all that sort of stuff today, but he seems pretty relaxed. But he knows the pressure's on. He knows what's at stake. He's not silly. But what people underestimate about Brad Fittler, I guess it was like with you, Laurie, as well. You might be really nice guys off the field, but you're as competitive as anyone, and Freddie has that real ruthless competitive streak. Mm. And he won't want to lose to Queensland, especially in two straight games, especially after making changes to his team. So there is a lot at stake for Brad Fittler, and I think he likes the challenge. You know, but if they happen to lose, you watch people come out and bring up everything Freddie might have done differently.
Yeah.
And criticise it. It'll happen for sure. It'll happen for sure. Like anyone who's succeeded in their own way, if they don't succeed, that's when all the things they did differently get brought up and criticised. So I'm hoping for Brad's sake that he gets through this. And I'm more confident that New South Wales will win than I was in the first game. I didn't have a lot of good feelings going into that game. I'm not a great tipster, but I think that, you know, I think New South Wales feel like they're a better team to me now. Whether they can come together in a short space of time, that to me, beyond anything else, and getting their sessions right and training well and getting their combinations right, that's the biggest challenge right now.
What about Perth, Denny? The conditions over there, as Loz mentioned, the game being played a bit earlier, does that suit New South Wales more than Queensland, or doesn't change too much?
Pop, I don't really know. I won't lie to you. I mean, look, I don't really know. I think that it's a great stadium. I know that much.
Yeah.
Whether the week of being here helps New South Wales, or whether Queensland are just going to come in and, you know, they're training in, you know, they're in there playing their banjos and whatever else they're doing in Queensland and having fun in their camp, and they just come over here and do a hit-and-run job on New South Wales, which, you know, it could happen.
Do you think there's much excitement over there, Denny?
I've only been here. I only got here yesterday. And, look, I was down at Scarborough Beach with the team, and there weren't hordes of fans sort of gathering around them, but there was the odd fan coming up wishing Freddie good luck, or the players good luck, and saying how much they're looking forward to it. But I guess we'll know more, once we're at training today and then, I guess, later in the week as well. I think there's a fan engagement on Saturday, but I think both teams have to go to that. So they are doing something to promote the game, which is good. I do think people like rugby league over here, but it's definitely not not the top of their, you know, top of their thought list.
How did Damien Cook take his, well, let's call it demotion, even though, you know, you could probably argue it's just a tactical move, putting Coruscant at nine, but how's Cookie respond?
Boys, he's more nervous about having to get up for your show. I saw Gutho yesterday, I said, you bumped me out of my slot. I hope you're getting up early for the Tuesday slot. He was laughing at me. I don't think he got up, did he?
No, he didn't. Nah. He didn't. He brushed us.
And I said that Cookie was going, oh, God, the hours aren't good. So, look, I had a bit of a chat to Cookie yesterday. And as ever, you know, you're not going to meet a better bloke than Damien Cook and a more reasonable and level-headed guy. He's taking it as you'd expect him to take it in his stride. He's just happy to be in the team. And he wants to make a contribution. And he's got the right attitude, and he probably knows it'll benefit his game having Appy there. Like, whilst the focus won't be on him as the out-and-out superstar number nine, he wants New South Wales to win.
On the contrary to Brad Fittler, if Billy Slater pulls this off in his first two games as Origin coach, I mean, his standing all of a sudden as a coach goes through the roof in such a short space of time, doesn't it?
Tigers coach.
Well, honestly, he will be linked to jobs sooner rather than later.
Will he be linked to one? And that'll be to take over from Craig Bellamy. Yeah. I couldn't see Billy, and I'm sure if he wanted to coach, he'd have, you know, if he has success, he could pick wherever. But I just see that fit being Melbourne, more so than anywhere else.
Look, I think unless he's a horrible failure in Origin, he could tell Melbourne he wants that job when Bellamy finished. Unless he really does badly. If he's just even mediocre, I think Billy's the one they'd like to take over. He's got he's always been an edgy sort of character, I think, Billy. Mm. Like, he's very popular, has the million-dollar smile and all of that. But I reckon to you, there's a tough
he's bloke. He's ruthless.
Billy. Oh, he's ruthless. Yeah. And he played ruthlessly. Like, you know that, Laurie, the way he attacked New South Wales, and he was win at all costs, wasn't he?
I used to have this argument with my mother. She loved him. Billy could do no wrong. And I'd say, Mum, you should see these things that I'm seeing on video that he does.
those files you used to put with Laurie.
Exactly.
The Slater files.
Oh, I had plenty of them. And you just sit there and go, how can this bloke get away with that?
He did. He played on the edge, and he was an unbelievable player. Like, you know, like, they're talking, you know, is he the greatest ever fullback? He may well be. When it comes to coaching, I think that he's got that same nice baby face smile that he presents to everybody. But I reckon around the team, he would be, you wouldn't want to do the wrong thing by him. I think the players would really respect him, and he could translate that to club football without too much of a problem. You should see, like, the preparation he does, even for his work in commentary with Nine, he's well researched. He's got notes. He does a lot of work to look as good and as easy as he does on camera, and the way he presents as a commentator. He works tirelessly on what he does. But whether he wants to put him through the ringer of coaching, coaching a first grade side, that's another question altogether. But I've got no doubt if he wanted the Melbourne job when Craig finishes, I don't think he'd have a problem getting it.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Now, speaking of potential coaches in waiting, Sam Burgess and Souths, what's going to happen with the Arara Valley Axeman coach?
Look, he was odds on to go to work with Wayne Bennett about 2 weeks ago. I think he'd actually made up his mind. But my intel is that after that horrible first half, I think there's now some pressure being applied to Sam Burgess from South, in particular Russell Crowe, to say, hey, listen, we don't want to lose you to the South Sydney club, and we'd like you to be having a coaching role with South probably starting next year. It's a decision Sam's going to have to make, but I don't know whether he can say no to Russell Crowe or South Sydney, given the backing that club has given him and his history at that club. And he's also got to consider whether he wants to sit behind Wayne Bennett or not for a couple of years and learn. That's obviously a big carrot. But you never know what could happen at South Sydney, do you, the way things are travelling at the moment. It's not looking particularly flash. I think they've got a lot of difficult decisions to make in coming years to the direction they're going to take, particularly in the halves. And they need to sign some outside backs as well. So I think South's they're in a spot where they're going to have to make some serious decisions.
It's a fascinating decision for Sam, isn't it? Given his loyalty to South and Russell Crowe, and it's a romantic link for him to go back there and help out. But is it best for him and his future moving forward as a coach? Because I think as a coach, if that's what he wants to do, and this is no disrespect to Jason Demetriou, I personally would be saying to Sam, mate, go and spend as much time with Wayne Bennett as you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, look, and I think that, but it's always hard sort of coming in after Wayne Bennett too. I don't know how many clubs have really progressed where Wayne's been the top coach and then he hands over to somebody else. And does that club always do well? Does a new coach always do well? I don't, off the top of my head, I can't really remember too much of that. Mm. And that's the other thing I think Sam would have to consider, like what Wayne's going to leave. And I actually think right now the Dolphins are a complete mess. I think the whole introduction of the Dolphins has been handled really poorly from the top of the game down. That they are struggling, I think. They've got to play games of football pretty soon, and I don't think they've got some good hard heads in the forwards, and they've got a rising young halfback from Penrith, but I don't get excited by anything I see from the Dolphins. And I think they're more than if Bennett's there for 3 years, it'll be a huge achievement for him to turn them into any sort of competitive force in that time.
Has Gus found his man at the Bulldogs in Mick Potter?
You reckon I can go, maybe, Potter. Welcome back, Potter.
He's giving nothing away still, the great Augustus. Nothing.
Did you see 100% footy last night?
If I would have watched that, I would have been up all night.
He said that...
spoken to anyone yet?
No, they're just here and now. They're here and now at the Bulldogs because they want to make it attractive for someone to potentially apply for the job down the track. They're not worried about anything in the future. They're worried about the right now.
Well, they're going all right now under Coach Potter.
They are.
Like Cameron Giraldo, if he was watching that the other day, reserve grade, the Tigers got flogged by the Dogs. And then first grade, the Tigers get flogged by the Dogs. Now, there's been an argument that the Dogs are one of the worst teams in a long time over the last few years, and the Tigers get flogged by them. That can't be good for... It's not a good sales pitch, is it? Tim Sheens and Justin Pascoe and Lee Hatchapetelis would have been fuming after watching that. But, I mean, that's... if you're trying to sell a club to someone and there's another club, apparently going for the same coach and get flogged by them. I know you don't make decisions on one game, but it wasn't a good selling point. Unless it maybe puts another couple of $100,000 on Serrato's price tag. What it might have done.
Yeah, no, you're sitting
there. I can't imagine Ivan Cleary's promoting the Tigers either. Saying great things to his 2IC.
I asked Ivan about that. I said, look, there is some paranoia coming out of the Tigers regarding both you
coming out of the Big Sports Breakfast.
You're Captain Paranoid. And he said he's only going to be a sounding board for Cameron. He's not going to tell him what to do. But he said he's not going to talk the Tigers down in any way. So you can only take people on their word, pup.
True.
And I'm taking Ivan on his word that he's going to give Cameron an ear for advice and to listen to, and he'll let him make his own decision because he is his own man, but he's also the sort of bloke who he's so thorough, it's ridiculous. I think he spent 6 hours asking questions of Sheens and Co. The other day, and I reckon he probably could have gone another 6 hours as well, just because asking stuff, because he wants to know everything about that club. He wants to know what's under the bonnet before taking any sort of leave.
Well, we appreciate you joining us at about 2 a.m. over there, Denny.
You could have rung me earlier. I've been up for an hour. I could have done Gutho's spot for you.
Well, no, we really appreciate it, mate, and hope it's a good week for you.
Yeah, can't wait for the game.
Brad Davidson coming up shortly. Now, this is a scoreboard update. Not many scores around, but Clark, I wanted to give you a score from, I think this was last Friday night. England played the Netherlands.
One-dayer.
In a one-dayer.
Yes.
And posted, I mean, seriously, I mean, what are they doing playing the Netherlands anyway in an official one-day international? But they posted 4 for 498.
Yes.
And they won by 232 runs. But that is a world record. I hate the fact that this is a world record when they're playing really a team that probably wouldn't win the Sydney second grade competition, let's be honest.
Yeah, but I think there's, excuse me, there's probably a few teams that you play against through your career that you know are not the best. And I've never made 500 or close to 500. So, unfortunately, you know how much I hate the Poms, Middo. But credit to them. They still made them. They belted them.
Yeah, and
they've got a very good 2020 team. So when you're playing a team like the Netherlands, even in a one-dayer, they would have said, you know what? They've given us a game to play, so that's it. Let's go as hard as we can. And they've just played like a 2020 for 50 overs.
That was Aussie Matthew Mott's first game in charge, by the way.
Good start.
Not the worst.
You are playing against clubbies, but doesn't matter. One from one. Take it, Motti, and run. And a world record. Three, but that'll be beaten as well. Someone will make 500 in a one-dayer.
That's not cricket. Seriously.
Well,
it's a slog. It's
the other thing as well, though, it's because of 2020 cricket. Teams are making 220 in a 20-over game. So you play on a small ground, lightning-fast outfield. Someone gets in or two blokes get in. That, and again, you look at that England one-day team. It is a very, very good team. And I don't enjoy saying that. I wish they weren't, but they are a really skillful one-day team.
Josh Butler not out 162 off 70 balls. Yeah, so one
he's
of three,
a freak.
Three century makers. Owen Morgan, the captain, got a golden duck. How would you feel? 498, golden globe for you.
There you go. He's saving him for another day. He wasn't required.
Liam
he probably knew it.
Liam Livingston, 66 not out off 22 balls.
Yeah, 2020. Made his name in 2020 cricket as well in the IPL. Josh Butler, I think Josh Butler scored 300 or 400 in this year's IPL in one tournament.
Yeah,
phenomenal. Yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable short-form player. And I cannot comprehend why he's not just as good in test cricket.
Can play, no doubt about that. More Tigers news. We were speaking about the story last night on Fox about Luke Brooks set to be dropped for the first time in his career. Also, Alex Twale is expected to miss the rest of the season after that concussion. That's his second this year. So it sounds like they're going to err on the side of caution with Alex Twale. And also, News Corp reporting that the club's going to allow Tyrone Peachy, who's been there for dead set 5 minutes, to test the open market. He's played 8 games for the Tigers since moving from the Gold Coast. He hasn't played since round 11 against the Bulldogs.
Oh,
he's been playing reserve grade. He's off contract next year.
How much is he getting paid? Payout. How much is he getting paid to play reserve grade?
But the administrator, like, that is a joke.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's not great. If you've signed a player for 2 years, he's played 8 games for you, and then you decide that you want to move him on, and you're going to have to contribute his salary somewhere else.
Unbelievable.
You know, when we talk about, Loz, what coach should be there and is Madge the right guy to coach and how many coaches we've gone through, what about we start thinking about that? Who are buying these players? Who are making these mistakes over and over and over
again?
Absolutely. Because whoever's doing that, they should be fired on the spot. They're about the coach. Who's buying these players? Who's making that decision?
And you can understand, like, Tim Sheens comes in and pop, you know, they want to put the broom through the place now. But,
yeah, but
at what cost?
I know, that's the problem, you know. You've got a cost associated with it all. And you're trying to sell your club as someone that, yeah, is a development club. But all of a sudden you're trying to, you know, make room, but it's going to cost you money to get rid of players. Why just come in, keep the players you got. Try and do the best with them you can. If you can move players on, that's fine. But, I mean, there's a responsibility when you have those players. It works both ways, that you've signed him, you've made a commitment to him that you're going to put him in a good football program, you're going to get the best out of him, and he's going to contribute to your club. That's what you're selling when you talk to a player. You sell them this big ideology of this is our football club, this is what we stand for, this is who we are, you know, we're supportive, you know, we look after one another, and we're going to provide you with the best environment and gobbledygook.
Yeah, well, the Tigers are promising the world and delivering an atlas at the moment.
And not a hard-covered one either.
My God.
It works, yeah, both ways. And it's always easy, you know, to move players on, but then the cost of it all, that's what you got to look at too.
Groundhog Day for Tigers fans. Now, time to talk some racing, and Brad Davison is joining us from Sky Racing. Morning, Brad.
Morning, guys. How are we?
Very well, thanks, mate. Now, I saw you having some hearty discussions on social media about the ride on Artorias. What did you make of its performance in the Platinum Jubilee Stakes, where it ran a very creditable third on the weekend?
Yeah, look, guys, I think the horse was simply outstanding. He could not have run better, you know, in that race. But, I mean, I had a bit of discussions on socials there on the weekend. Guys, I'm a big believer that a race is won or lost so often in the first furlong. And, you know, he is a horse, we know, that gets back a long way. But it's really, for me, it's really important for those horses to be in touch, to be within striking distance at the 400-metre mark. So, you know, when you're at the back of the field, one or two lengths is just paramount. It's crucial. And for me, they lost the race there on Artorias in the first 300 metres. They were just so negative, and it meant that at the 400-metre mark, he was in a different postcode to the leader. And from there, you just put yourself in a position where you need absolutely everything to go right. You need tempo. You need all the gaps. You need everything. And you take yourself from a 10-to-1 pop to about a 40-to-1 pop. And as you saw late, he obviously got held up and you know, should have won the race. But for me, it was all about that first 300 metres. If they just, you know, you watch his Blue Diamond win. He was able to settle in front of one or two. He was able to just stay in touch, and that's the key. When you get so far out the back and you're basically a length and a half off the last horse, it's just from there, it's just so hard. And when I watched the race, I thought, well, he can't win. You know, he's just got too much to do. And I thought the horse ran out of his skin. I think it was what could have been, really, for the team. But, I think they lost the race in the first 300 metres, guys.
Just on that then, Davo, and question without notice, and it's probably staring me in the face, this question, but is there a horse that changed its racing pattern dramatically that was a back marker that, you know, raced then up on speed that turned into a successful horse?
Oh, there's some that do. I mean, there's a fine line, no doubt, because a lot of people will say, oh, you ride them out of their comfort zone and they won't finish off. But it's not riding them out of their comfort zone. It's not like you're riding them upside down. All you're doing is you're just getting them. Yeah. You're holding your position, basically. You're not, you know, losing that ground that you don't need to lose for nothing. It's not like you're spending any more energy to be there, really. You know, you watch the Blue Diamond race. You're just given one or two little push-alongs in the first 200 metres and all of a sudden, you know, you're two lengths closer than you were. But when you're so negative early, you end up being about, you know, 15 lengths off the lead, and it's just too far. So there is a real fine line to it, because if you ride them upside down and you know you're up there midfield or better, then a lot of the times they won't finish off, and you know you got the chance of them over racing and whatnot. So there is a fine line to it, but yeah, as a spectator watching, a lot of the times, you know, when you see it and you go, well, you know, you can basically sit there sometimes and go, well, it can't win, because it's just so far back. And when you get so far back in races, you need way too much to go right. So you need to give those sort of low percentage horses just every chance. And for me, it's all about the first 300-400 metres in races with those types of horses.
Chris Waller, a big day at Rose Hill, not for the first time.
No, 5 winners. And good to see Wicklow bounce back as well. You know, he was one that has had a bit of a boom on him and a little bit disappointing first up. But like a lot of horses off long breaks, they just sometimes need that run. And he was probably in that camp, so for him to bounce back over the same trip was ideal. But, yeah, 5 winners across the day, a number of good winners there at Rose Hill, and, trained half the cut.
What have you made of Willie Pike since he's been over here, Dava?
I must admit, when he first got here, I sort of thought to myself, I'm not sure, because, you know, you're a big fish in a small pond in WA, and and you come over here and it's a lot more competitive, and I thought, you're probably not going to get the support and all this sort of stuff, but he has just really, you know, it took a little while to settle in, I think it's fair to say, but, I mean, he's right on Skyman at Rose Hill on the weekend. It was just, for any young jockey out there that wants to know how to ride a track that's playing fence and run, well, that's the way you ride, you know. This is a great example of a so-called backmarker. He had a third defence, and you know, you needed to be on the fence there on the weekend. He knew that. It's amazing. Some jockeys really got that and understood it, and then some seemed a little bit oblivious to it. So he was one that was just completely switched on, and I think he's right on Skyman. Just shows how well he's going. You know, he had a third defence behind the leader. He was on the right part of the track. Yes, he got held up a touch at the top of the straight, but it didn't matter because he was in within touch, and it meant that, you know, you could still get held up for 100 metres and overcome that, you know, that bad luck and still win the race easily. So his ride was outstanding. He had a double there. I think he's going to be a real force next season if he gets the support. You know, he's done it on a number of occasions now. Canterbury a few weeks ago on Cruel Summer, the exact same scenario. You needed to be on the fence. He put the horse in the race early. He found the fence, third the fence, and from there it was game over. He was a $1.50 pop. And that's that intent I talk about in the first 200 metres. He seems to really have it, Will. He's understanding that, and you know, he's getting the results as a result.
I reckon we might be following a horse that Loz had in his multi on the weekend. It's the first time we've mentioned it, Loz. We won't mention it again.
Don't mention it again.
What are we following, though, Davo?
Yeah, so following Ozopenko. Didn't get the cash there, Loz, on the weekend, but he's a bit stiff. Probably one of the only horses on the day to really run on against the pattern, which was fence in run. So he didn't find the fence from barriers 2-1, kicked up inside him. But, you know, I spoke about a couple of weeks ago, guys, this obsession with getting cover, and I don't know if it was sort of tactics pre-race or what, but I think the decision to sort of take cover there and get three lengths off the lead was the difference, because he only had to chase off a real soft speed with 59 kilos, and the horse was the run in the race by country mile, but he just got way too far back early and on the wrong part of the track, and that was the difference between winning and losing. So he's a horse that I think will be winning next time out, wherever he goes, really. His run in the race was simply outstanding.
Any horse disappoint you?
Yeah, I think Per, in a way. I mean, it got the perfect run there on the fence and sort of presented and didn't really do a great deal in the straight. So when they sort of on the right part of the track as favourites and they're not able to finish the race off, did get all the favours at its Australian debut as well. So it might be one that I'm half keen to take on next time out. I mean, you know, this time of the year, it's all about where they're placed and whatnot, but I thought it could have offered a little bit more in the straight there, Per, in a way, on Saturday.
Thank you, Davo. Looking forward to your midweek mail tomorrow.
Thanks, guys. Look forward to it.
Cristiano Ronaldo's $3 million car has been involved in a crash in Mallorca, a Bugatti.
What's he done?
He wasn't driving it, though, but it skidded into some sort of wall. He's over there holidaying with his family. I'm guessing it's probably the driver, Loz. I think the driver might have had a moment, from what I can see. But $3 million, that car. £1.7 million it's worth.
Hopefully insured.
Imagine what the insurance would cost. Hopefully.
Reckon it might be.
Might be his.
Yeah.
It's probably not his.
Well, it is
definitely
his.
Is.
He's probably got a sponsor.
Yeah, he's probably gifted it. Exactly right.
What, they just give away $3 million cars?
Mate.
I suppose when it's Cristiano Ronaldo. Yes. Yeah, okay.
One social media post, $3 million.
Yep.
Have a good day.
Fair call.
You're going to doubt
very similar.
Again?
Very similar to what you get with Toyota.
Well, I'm still going to say it's insured.
It's definitely insured.
But he not paying for it?
No. Well, if he is, he's not bothered. He's letting someone else drive it and crash it. He doesn't care.
Yeah, you'll get another one. Good publicity, this.
Yeah.
Perfect. So it was planned.
Right, who knows? But you tell me how much coverage that car will get. The brand of that car.
No, I don't think that brand needs any coverage. If you're loaded, you own one. They're all limited edition, the Bugattis.
Limited edition? How many would they sell?
Well, it depends. Depends what car it is. That car, there's probably 200 made in the world.
Wow.
The car he's got.
Yeah.
All limited edition. All the heavies in America, they love them as well.
No one injured. The driver accepted full responsibility for what happened.
Smart move, driver.
Hmm. Dave Stanley, morning to you.
Yeah, morning,
similar
boys.
To DS's car.
You drive a Bugatti?
No, oh, yeah. No.
Similar to the wagon, the sky, yeah. the sky wagon you yeah, get round
the sky
in.
Wagon. DS. Mate, I wouldn't be able to fit in the Bugatti. How would I get in the front seat?
Yeah,
they're only made for very small. But just having a look at this, it's a fair old, looks like a fair old wall the Bugatti's hit. Like, it's not just about, it's sort of like on one of these roads. I mean, I've never been there, but it looks, I love how Loz just goes straight to the, oh, it's a G up. No, it's all, you know, it's planned. It's just trying to get the publicity, Bugatti, you know. So there you go, boys. How was your weekend on the punt? I didn't ask you that yesterday. How did you all go?
No good.
No good. Middo?
Yeah, no, it was all right, mainly because I followed Gowie into Matt Fitzpatrick in a golf tipping comp, actually.
Okay.
So that got me, and I had Skyman on Saturday, and I had something on Friday at, where were they racing Friday? Geelong. Got something on Friday.
Thanks for sending that through, too, to the group, Middo.
Well,
the Friday at Geelong,
it was a last minute. I'm at the pub having a bet.
Now, Dave.
Post golf.
Yes, Lawrence.
Here we go.
Yeah, no, well, I want to. Dave sends me mail on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And usually, if they win, you get a, you know, boys, did you see that or how good?
They
all got. Because I didn't have too many bets on the weekend, but I certainly didn't have anything on those tips.
They went like bastards. They went very. Actually, I've got to bring this up.
Yeah,
now you have brought it up because I was actually chatting with Luke about this. There's a punters club that we're involved with. Obviously, there's myself, Laurie, a couple of blokes from work. Marlo's in it as well. Now, I'm not a big believer in, you know, powers, higher powers that are above and all that sort of stuff. But, mate, if I get a tip from someone and I just back it myself or I text you privately or whatever, they might win. Anything I put in that chat goes like death. So, and I don't know what the rules are around the punters club, but we have not had a winner all year. No one's back to winner. We're still on zero in the comp that we're on, or that we're in. So I want to know. I need to get some information on the others in the group about what's going on.
It's been a disaster.
It's ordinary.
It's terrible. Mm.
We're
on zero.
See, we can't even hold anyone to account because we were all hopeless.
That's the thing. But Middo, as I'm saying, even away from our bets in the actual punters club for the competition. Anything that's put in there, it just doesn't seem to be winning. But if I retain the tip, like you say did with Geelong, you'll back a winner. So I want to know what's going on. Do we delete the group chat from the phone and start again?
I reckon that had happened in most group chats, don't you think?
It's just...
If you put something out that you want...
It starts playing on your mind, doesn't it?
Well, it puts pressure on you, I know that.
So we just need to...
How did your multi go on the weekend? The Punters Club multi? As in, not our punters club, but the...
No, Glenn Munsey. That's Glenn. Glenn's league
didn't
win.
He let the team down, Munz, did he?
And this is the one thing that I hope that Glenn's listening or it'll get back to Glenn is
Doesn't Munz always give those young blokes a bit of a talking to?
And we never tee off. We never tee off on Glenn. We just, you know, if he pulled the wrong rein, that's his, you know, oh, well, move on. We're very quiet about it, respectful. But, geez, if someone else makes a wrong decision, Glenn's on the attack.
Well,
he's like the opening batsman.
Breaking news here. Courtesy the Racing Australia website. A 3-year-old filly by the name of Pretty Wild is nommed for Saturday at Randwick.
Oh.
A benchmark 72 over the 1300. For Saturday. So
I've just got a message here from Brett Devine from the ATC media manager. Hi all. At 2:05 on Saturday afternoon, Michael Clark will be doing signings out on the front lawn at Randwick. There'll be photo opportunities as well for 4 hours. Bring all Australian cricket gear through the gates as much as you want. There you go, pup. Gee, you're a good man, mate.
Nah,
you'll get to Randwick Saturday.
It's the least I can do.
He's a man of the people, Loz.
He's a man of the people, mate. He'll be there.
Didn't I see you in a Bugatti as well, pup, the other week?
No, that is incorrect.
You'd love one, though.
Yes, I would.
But the only thing on those fast cars, where do you take them? Like, you can't drive.
They're not built to drive on.
You can't take it to Woolies.
Yeah, you go to Woolies.
You can.
I'm just running down to get some groceries.
You can.
What a lift. You're driving your car down to Woolies. Just pulling
exactly
up in the car park.
Exactly right.
You know?
You're going to have to put the groceries in the front seat, though, because there's nowhere else for them.
Take it to June Elos.
Imagine rocking up there.
Ah, yeah.
Scratches all over it.
Would you be parking at the other end of the car park, just away from everyone? You're going, I don't want to park near other cars. Mate, you know, when you get a new car.
Have someone just
if any of
right
us had a car worth $3 million, you would not be driving it. It'd be in a box in your house somewhere. What a showpiece.
What's the point?
Just buy a matchbox.
There you go. That's why none of us have got one. It's exactly right.
Otherwise, they go through walls in Mallorca. Hey, boys, we've got on the show today Luke Price, Terry Robinson, Matt Dunn, Anthony Cummings. We've got two meetings in New South Wales today. We're racing up at Mwoolumbah. We'll check in with the CEO there, find out how it's all going in Mwoolumbah, and racing at Maruya as well. So a bit doing today. You know, try and find your winner. And there's been some moves for a few horses, boys. So we've got previews of those two meetings today. Plus, we'll have a chat with Going Greys. A lot happening in the greyhound space. That's around 10:30. You don't want to go anywhere on Sky Sports Radio today. You go and enjoy your Tuesday. Another cracking day in Sydney Town. Boys, have a good day.
Dave.
See you, DS.